6. Let us then be proactive in gathering together to pray, and let us intercede for one another, as they did for the apostles, because in doing so, we both adhere to a commandment and are anointed in love. And when I talk about love, I'm referring to all good things, and also cultivate a more fervent thankfulness, for those who are grateful for others' blessings will undoubtedly be more so for their own. This was the regular practice of David, too, as he said, "Glorify the Lord with me, let's raise his name together." Psalm 6:4-3. This is also consistently urged by the apostle. Let us aim for the same, and let's openly express God's kindness to all, so we can gather others to participate in praise. For if we make known any good done for us by people, it encourages them to be more ready to help us. Far more, by highlighting God's blessings, we are likely to increase his goodwill towards us. And if we encourage others to join us in thanks after receiving benefits from people, we should all the more aim to bring others to God, who can give thanks on our behalf. For if Paul, who had great assurance in God, did this, it is much more essential for us. Let us then call on the saints to give thanks for us, and let's do the same for one another. Especially for priests, this good act is their right, since it's a great privilege. By approaching God, we first give thanks for the entire world and all good things shared by everyone. While God's blessings are for everyone, your personal survival is included in the collective well-being, meaning you should give shared thanks for your own unique blessing, as well as uniquely thank him for universal blessings. For he didn't just light up the sun for you alone, but for everyone equally. However, you have it in full measure on your part. The sun is large enough for the collective good, yet you as an individual perceive it as large as anyone else. Therefore, you owe a gratitude as vast as everyone's combined, and you should thank God for both shared blessings and individual virtues of others, because we also receive many blessings on account of others. If only 10 righteous people were found in Sodom, it would have been spared its downfall. So let's also be thankful for others' faith in God. It's a traditional practice embedded in the church from the outset. Paul expressed his gratitude for the Romans, Romans 8:8, the Corinthians, 1 Cor 4:1-4, and the entire world, 1 Timothy 1:1-2. And don't say, "I didn't contribute to the good work," because even if you didn't, you should still give thanks if your counterpart is doing well. Furthermore, by expressing your approval, you claim it as your own, share in its glory, and will also receive its reward. That's why church laws prompt prayers to be offered in this way, not only for the faithful, but also for the catechumens. The laws motivate the faithful to intercede for the uninitiated. When the deacon says, "Let's earnestly pray for the catechumens," he's merely rallying all pious individuals to pray for them, despite the fact that the catechumens are still outsiders. They're not yet part of Christ's body, haven't received the mysteries, and are still separated from the spiritual flock. But if we should intercede for these individuals, then we should all the more do so for our own members. That's why he urges you to earnestly pray for them, so you don't dismiss them as strangers but pay attention to them. They're yet to join the prescribed prayers that Christ initiated. They lack confidence and require support from those who have been initiated. They're standing outside the king's courts, far from the sacred boundaries. Hence, they're even dismissed while sacred prayers are ongoing. The deacon therefore encourages you to pray for them, that they may become members of your group, so they're no longer strangers. The words, "Let's pray," are not just directed to the priests, but also to all the people. When he says, "Let's stand in order, let's pray," he's encouraging everyone to pray,